My name's Colonel Ethan Diven, call sign Outlaw 01, the Commander of Operations Group here at the National Training Center, Fort Irwin, California. Today's episode of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, is part of the Warrior Chronicles, the podcast of Operations Group and the National Training Center. Gauntlet brings you best practices fresh from experiences of the box, with leaders that have survived and thrived in the crucible of ground combat. Today, I'm sitting down with 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division, the Brigade Commander, Blackjack 6, Colonel Jose Reyes, and one of his company commanders, Sergeant 6, Captain Brendan Fowler. Your team must be incredibly proud of what the Blackjack Brigade, Task Force Blackjack, accomplished while here. And thanks for spending the time with us today to make our Army and our joint force better. The opening question, what is burning on most people's mind? What was harder than you expected? Blackjack 6, over to you.
Thank you for having us, first and foremost. Happy to talk with you today and to hopefully make our Army better. What was harder than I expected was the conduct of security operations while considering our adjacent units in the division large-scale combat operation fight. We often found ourselves assuming away our flank because a sister brigade was there and the brigade boundary accounted for that piece of key terrain. When in fact, our thinking enemy, the Black Horse Regiment, often exploited those seams and we saw some enemy vehicles and other elements in our rear area. Our plan often accounted for the fight forward, the deep fight, and then the rear, the sustainment area operations and sustainment, but did not often account for what combat power we would need to fight an enemy formation that was coming for our brigade support area, our self-propelled artillery locations, or for our command and control nodes.
In battlefield framework and battlefield geometry is a brigade task and super challenging to fight inside the 52nd ID's construct. Now, so down to a company commander, so Sergeant 6, what was harder than you expected during your fight here?
At the company level, it's a little bit different challenge. We have a lot more tasks that challenge down at that level. We came through this rotation when we had zero loom, so it was the darkest nights that we would have. That proved to be extremely challenging for my company in particular. Night land navigation on unfamiliar terrain with new tank commanders proved to be slow, deliberate, and forced us to put an emphasis on safety, which I think at all levels we had done adequately, and that obviously saved some lives during the rotation. But navigating through the box with minimum loom was definitely harder than I expected it to be.
We like to say that the desert does not care. It is an unforgiving environment with the much vaunted opposing force, the Black Horse Regiment, that makes generating combat power, uncoiling and employing ourselves incredibly hard. There have to be some things that you were not expecting that were actually surprises. So what surprised you most during your rotation?
I have been here before, and I know the challenge presented to us for communications when we are operating an armored brigade combat team at such a distance. However, I still found myself surprised by our difficulty to communicate and establish a true fighting pace for us to be able to communicate changes and employ decision point tactics. What we often fell back on was mission and commander's intent versus decision point tactics on the battlefield. Because of our struggles with communications and setting a deliberate C2 architecture to disseminate orders in a timely fashion.
Now, how about in charging? What surprised you and your troopers?
Colonel Reyes has been here quite a few times. This is my first time at the National Training Center. So the biggest surprise was the size of the maneuver space itself. That operating at night, operating during the day, and Black Horse's ability to use that open maneuver space and capitalize on it, that definitely surprised me and forced me to change how I was operating at the company level in order to combat that. So that was definitely the most surprising part of coming to the National Training Center.
Did you see over time your company being close together because they weren't experienced or used to the expansive open spaces? And then as you became more comfortable, starting to spread out and become more dispersed?
Absolutely. Once we emphasized how much we can disperse as a tank company and max effective range of the weapon systems, and they felt more comfortable opening up their maneuver, we saw an increase in the dispersion of the company during offensive and defensive operations.
So it sounds like we were a learning organization.
Absolutely.
Outstanding. What are you most proud of? Because there are a lot of wins that each of the organizations, really across Task Force Blackjack, experience. So Charge 6, let's start with you. What are you most proud of from your experience here?
What I'm most proud of has to be my company's flexibility. During this rotation, we were task organized under a different battalion. We were part of 1-8 Mustangs, and that incurs a lot of flexibility inherent to that job. We were also tasked to be the brigade reserve at the beginning of the operation, and that definitely forced us to be more flexible with multiple COAs or courses of action that we would have had to execute. But I'm most proud of the company's ability, down to the tank commander, down to the loader, of their flexibility during our rotation at the National Training Center.
Do you find there was flexibility within your company because of how much time you had to train up at home? Was there a particular product or a way you brought leaders together and quickly gave out guidance? What can you contribute to that flexibility?
The flexibility that I would contribute to that is our team cohesiveness. When I executed an operations order, I emphasized my intent and went through the graphics and made sure they understood where everybody was and what the initial plan was, down to the tank commander level. And that provided the flexibility within that intent that's nested with the battalion commander's intent and the brigade commander's intent, so that they were comfortable giving recommendations and being able to action on Black Horse as they fought us.
And so when you issued those operations orders to your company in a time-constrained environment, who did you bring to attend your company operations? Because you said you confirmed down to the tank commander level. How did you make sure that happened?
Multiple ways throughout our rotation. So we, at the beginning, just executed with the platoon leaders and the platoon sergeants. Based on the detail of the plan and where we were currently at in our operation, there were times that I was able to pull tank commanders in to be a part of it. And they absolutely were a part of the rehearsals that we executed before we executed the operation. But other ways that I would do that is spot checking graphics, ensuring that that information is getting down to the tank commander level at a minimum. I had a lot of help from my first sergeant and my XO in executing that, but we were able to get down to the tank commander level and ensure they understood the mission as it was.
So you specified that graphics were down to the tank commander level as a pre-combat check, and then you, your first sergeant, and your XO conducted a pre-combat inspection to ensure that that was completed. That sounds like a best practice in a TTP that anyone listening could take forward. All right, Blackjack 6, over to you. What are you most proud of with what Task Force Blackjack accomplished?
I'm most proud of everybody's willingness and eagerness to take in feedback from the awesome operations group and to incorporate that feedback, sometimes right there on the spot, and be better on our last day in the box than we were on our first day. So we are a better brigade task force today than we were a month ago, and that shows. And I think that everybody's willingness to admit that they don't know everything and that there are other people who have valuable advice to contribute is what has been a big part of our learning experience. Based off of the training proficiency that the brigade was able to get to prior to our rotation here at the National Training Center, I feel that we have grown leaps and bounds because of everybody's willingness to learn and how much they cared about warfighting and being better warfighters.
Now, Task Force Blackjack created and used a unique document called the Transition Support Matrix, where our observations as the operations group, we routinely see units do not do a great job, at least up front, but grow over time, at identifying the conditions required before we execute a major task. Now, your team put together this unique document. Can you talk a little bit about what that did for you as the brigade commander and how it helped you see and ultimately fight?
Absolutely. So it complements the decision support matrix in that, as you just said, it helps us anticipate transitions that we think will come. So throughout mission analysis and definitely through COA analysis, course of action analysis, the brigade staff were able to identify several transitions that we thought might occur in the conduct of a battle, whether that be the employment of the reserve, the jumping forward of the forward logistics element, or something else along those lines. We then set aside conditions that needed to be met, two companies worth of combat power remaining in the battalion that's conducting the combined arms breach, for example. So another transition would be initiating the combined arms breach. So two companies of combat power available in the battalion that is conducting the combined arms breach. Two batteries in position, ready to fire, suppression and obscuration targets. A list of other conditions that needed to be met. What that allowed us to do is say, okay, of the seven conditions to execute this transition, We are currently 4 of 7. We anticipate the other 3 of 7 in the next 20 minutes. Okay, we are now 6 of 7. The 7th one will happen in 5 minutes or may not happen. And so just like a decision support matrix, the way we used it was conditions met. It also listed follow-on actions. So if these conditions are met and we make this transition, here are the follow-on actions. Who are the people authorized to direct this transition? Out of contact, I was able to take a look at those conditions and say, yes, if these 7 conditions are present, we will conduct this transition and we will execute, as an example, the combined arms breach, or as an example, jumping forward of the forward logistics element. I was then making a decision out of contact, which allowed the staff in the heat of battle to say, we have met the 7 conditions. The brigade commander has already made this decision. Go or execute. And what I have told the staff is, okay, if we have 7 conditions, only 6 of the 7 are met. Well, that's where you have to come to me, because now we are not at the optimal set of conditions we need to execute this transition. And then I said, I am, you know, the approval authority. If not all conditions are met, after me, it's Field Artillery Battalion Commander Rolling Thunder 6 because of his positioning on the battlefield. After that, the Brigade Executive Officer, and so on. And what we did was, all conditions are met. I've already made a decision. Not all of them. Well, then that's where they have to come to me with a decision. It helped us forecast transitions, and I think it also helped us stay on track with anticipating changes that were coming next.
You mentioned that was developed while the staff was conducting the MDMP, specifically from mission analysis to COADEV to co-analysis. How involved did you see yourself in those steps of the MDMP? And then how did you balance that with going and doing battlefield circulation and seeing your commanders and getting updates from the front?
I mean, the military decision-making process, right, as we know, is a commander-driven process. And so I made a deliberate effort to ensure that I was available to the planning staff at key moments. At receipt of mission, although we did not successfully do it every single time, one of the things we employed from time to time was a receipt of mission brief, where the staff and I would sit down and say, okay, this is the mission we received from our higher headquarters, in this case, 52nd Infantry Division. Another touch point at mission analysis brief, COA, course of action development brief, course of action analysis outputs. I made sure that I had a series of touch points with the staff to make sure that they were in line with my intent. What I didn't want to do is be a commander that was always the forward line of troops and therefore never available to the staff. And so my challenge to myself was balancing the time with the planning staff, the current operations staff, as well as the battalions and the forward line of troops. What it cost me was I was in the 2 weeks out in combat operation, unable to see every single company, troop, and battery out in the battle space. But I do feel that it benefited the brigade by my presence in driving the military decision-making process.
So how are you going to use the experience of, you know, preparing for, fighting here, the ups, the downs, the environmental conditions, the enemy continuously contesting you to inform your home station training? Because we are regenerating combat power and about to load trains and head back to Fort Cavazos. So how are you going to use this for what's next? Charging 6, you first.
We found that when we're in the box, we have no choice but to get better. We were in the box for 14 days, and we found ourselves executing some of the small things and training those up for the first battle period. What I mean by that is the tactical assembly areas, occupying battle positions, sector sketches, all those things that are at the tank commander level and elevate up, found ourselves focusing on those a lot in the first battle period. Going back to home station, I think we're going to focus on those things, that they're battle rhythm events, and we can come into the National Training Center with a foundation. When we come for 14 days to execute training, we're building on that foundation, and we can start to get after the larger elements of maneuvering on the enemy, some of the intricate details of maneuvering a tank company. And so focusing on those small things, lethality, TAAs, occupying battle positions, and then doing it at night, and doing all of those things will set us up for success when we come back to the National Training Center a year from now.
Many of those tasks and focus areas are likely informed and enabled by non-commissioned officers inside your company. How are you going to leverage their experiences here and empower them to make that happen inside your company?
So at Fort Cavazos, we have dedicated and protected time, leaders training time all through Third Corps. We're going to maximize our ability to do that, as well as putting NCOs at the educational point of friction, that's what I would call it. So ensuring that they are rooted in doctrine and are executing the training that we're doing back at home station to a standard that is rooted in doctrine and also within our TACSOP, and putting the NCOs forward and executing that training while the lieutenants are there observing, driving, making sure it's happening, but the person that is actually doing and executing the training and making the checks is the NCO in the company.
And then what advice do you have for leaders that have an NTC rotation in their future?
A working JBCPs win the day is what I would say. And then following 5988 from the forward line of troops back to the logistics resupply or however you hand that off, and then ensuring that it gets back to the maintenance team and it's being followed through on, which would be a good task for the XO to follow up on. But ensuring that happens will pay dividends when you finish the National Training Center rotation and begin the regen process that we're currently executing now. But going back to the first point, the JVCPs is a huge tool that I wish I had more FMC JVCPs, because it does enable the company to execute sector sketches, execute overlay distribution. All of the things that are incorporated in that system really do help get that information down to the tank commander level. And the more you have operational, the more successful you'll be in the box.
Okay, powerful feedback. So JBCP, operational readiness rate, and then 5988 Echo Flow doesn't stop at the logistics release point. It goes all the way back. Great feedback. Thank you very much. So to Blackjack 6, how are you going to use your experience here to inform home station training back at Fort Cavazos?
You know, we have the great opportunity to learn from NTC Rotation 2502 and apply it to our next National Training Center rotation, 2602, a short 11 months from now. So what we are doing is heeding the advice of yourself, Outlaw 01, Outlaw 440, and Lead 7 to refine our standard operating procedures. We are already taking a look at them and have an updated draft version that we will finalize before leaving here, as well as our training guidance for fiscal year 25 en route to rotation 2602. What that will focus on is a more robust communications training regimen, specifically the JBCP that Charge and Six just talked about, and our FM communications. Because although he mentioned 5988s, I think the brigade prior to this rotation knew the importance of 5988 echoes. However, my assessment is I failed to emphasize the importance of it, not only for platforms, pacers and other vehicles, but for communications equipment as well. And if we could focus our 5988 echo and our PMCS process, preventive maintenance checks and services process, on all of our ancillary equipment as well, I think that will pay us huge dividends coming to the National Training Center rotation 2602. We're also going to stress our ability to plan, prepare, execute, and assess simultaneously by multi-echelon training every opportunity we have. So a company or a battalion going to a range can employ a battalion command and control node on top of that to exercise planning for the future operation while conducting current operations at the same time.
And what advice do you have for leaders that have an NCC rotation in their future? You just talked about advice to yourself coming back here in a short 11 months, but there are multiple brigades that are coming at the beginning of next year. What would you say to them as they complete their final preparations at their home station?
I think that your training should incorporate and stress your ability to plan while tracking a current battle at the same time. That is hard to replicate at home station, where you don't have a professional opposing force in the Black Horse Regiment to fight against. But I think it's doable. One of our shortfalls at the beginning was a less trained current operations staff and radio, RTOs, radio operators, that knew what to listen for and what they were then going to do with the information that they just listened to. As an example, one of the battalion commanders talked about the personnel in their current operations section would sit there and only listen to the call sign for that battalion and not listen for what the cavalry squadron was doing ahead of them, which was telling them, what the enemy was doing in front of them. So I think one of the pieces of advice I would give is, hey, if you don't have an RTO training session, develop one and implement it before coming here. You will pay dividends by your RTOs, your battle non-commissioned officers, and your battle officers, your battle captains, and knowing what to do before fighting the Black Horse Regiment.
No, super powerful feedback from two commanders inside the Blackjack Brigade. On the heels of rotation 25-02, Blackjack Brigade has a lot to be proud of. You remained coachable the entire time. You clearly are a learning and a lethal organization. It was a pleasure to work as part of your team. As always, our observer coach and trainers are on your team. Even though you're going to depart here in the very near future, we exist to make you more successful leaders and warfighters. We've got a ton of resources that are available, whether it's our Meal Suite page or subscribing to our TAC Talks, where we've covered other topics. And it has been incredibly fun to be part of Task Force Blackjack for the past few weeks. And we wish you guys safe travels and your return back to Fort Cavazos. So I am Outlaw 01. Thank you for listening to this episode of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, our podcast at the Operations Group at the National Training Center as part of the Warrior Chronicles. We hope you enjoy this episode.